recorded.
Boy, she's just like the feds.
Wait, there are feds?
Yeah. All right. I've been informed that I may have to bail halfway through, so.
Okay. We can always record more later.
Yeah. Or we could tie into something that's happening next week.
Ooh.
What we could do, I figure I've got the week I had in D.C., going to see Batman Live, and that's about it because I really haven't read anything.
I have some comics, and then when I was in Illinois, I have a really cool comic shop story.
Okay. Well, what I'm thinking is if I have to take off like in a half hour, I could just say like, you know, I'll be back in a second, and then just not come back.
Oh, okay.
And if you want to finish the podcast, then because I'm being deployed next week, that can tie into the deal.
Again?
Yeah. And I'm not going to tell you where, because when you hear it, you'll get a kick out of it. At least not to the podcast. So, but then again, you know, I might be able to do the whole hour. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Okay. We'll find out. Yeah. We'll see what She Who Must Be Obeyed says. Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the end of the series of tubes and wires we call the interwebs is Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
You know, they had a thing called Kenner's Daddy Saddle. I'm just wondering if that might work today.
Who are you going to saddle up?
Oh, I'm just thinking maybe my wife will want one for me.
I don't think we should go there. This isn't an adult podcast.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is the longest running episodic comic book podcast in the history of the whole known universe.
After being gone for, 6 months and a week, it's actually good to be home.
Well, that's good. I went home.
I heard about that.
Home
I heard
Central Illinois.
Here I come back, and I'm thinking, well, we'll get to where I went in a bit, but I was thinking, it's time for another podcast. And then I get a emergency call from the state police saying that they've spotted Corey's little Yugo blitzing down the highway at breathtaking speeds. Apparently, no brakes.
Oh, there were brakes.
The last thing they saw you go into Iowa, and after that, they didn't care. So I was curious what actually happened.
Well, you know how if you with your car, after a while, you know, the brakes will squeak for a bit. Mine didn't do that. I pushed on the brakes and there was a horrible grinding noise. I tried turning the radio up, but that didn't seem to help. And I'd gone down to Illinois, 2-3 years ago to get the brakes done. And they had a lifetime warranty. So I called up here because I, you know, wanted to compare costs and found out how much it would be. And then I called the place that I had the brakes done down there and found out that it would be like less than $100 for everything. Plus they'd fix some other stuff. And I'd get to see my family, who I haven't seen in about a year and a half. So now I was going to do it this weekend, but I got a call from the group home after working an overnight shift where they said, is there any way that you could work Friday and Saturday of next weekend? And at first I said, no. And then I thought for a minute and I thought, you know, that would be 17 hours of overtime. So I called the car repair place, called my parents, made sure that everything would be fine if I came down a week early. It was. So I called the group home and said, I will do it if I get the overtime. Don't cut hours anywhere else. And I explained why I wanted to do it. And right now they're pretty desperate because one of the overnight staff is out for a month with a torn ACL. All the college students have gone back and they didn't hire anybody because they forgot that college students leave. And, this week, however, I'm working every day from, last Sunday, about 2 hours after I got back, to not this Thursday, today, not next Thursday, but next Friday. So I'm running on a lack of sleep, So if I start to say some weird stuff, well, really, who would notice?
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to qualify it better than that.
So you're back.
Yep. I got back from Vegas, and then they sent me to D.C. for a week, which was fine.
Did you tell them how to run things?
Well, oddly enough, nobody was home. Some type of erection going on. I didn't want to know. He said it's in all the papers.
I'm sick and tired of these presidential erections.
Yeah.
Why do we have to hear so much about them putting up statues of former presidents?
Yeah, they're just too hard on us, normal folks. But
the crickets, they're still here.
Good.
They're transitioning to fall.
We've got this big wood spider out on our garage, and I'm worried that the crickets may come over and accidentally feed the spider. It's big, too. Anyway.
Is his name Boris?
But they sent me to D.C., and it was only for a week. They have a testing lab out there, so we got to be guinea pigs.
Woo! Did you have electrodes stuffed in you?
I can't say anymore. It's all top secret.
Oh, okay. Well, it's about time somebody did electroshock therapy on.
But it wasn't too bad. It was 9 to 5. It was a pretty easy gig, you know.
Way to make a living.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. Because, you know, one of the things they do before they decide to put any new equipment in the field or change the processes, they test it. And since, you know, we're usually just sitting around not doing anything, we go and do whatever they need to, you know, walk around in circles, get irradiated, various electrodes on things. But I did get evenings free. And so naturally I went out and I discovered two things, both of them in the same area. Now, I don't know how familiar with DC you are. A little bit south, there's a place called,
I knew DC pretty well up until the flashpoint, and then I've kind of lost interest.
We'll talk about that, trust me. But there's a place called Alexandria, and in Alexandria, it's in Virginia. It has a a mile long strip called Old Town. And I've been through it once, a couple of years ago. They brought us out for training at a different facility. And the last night we were there, we found a place called Bilbo Baggins Restaurant, which is a really, really cool restaurant. It's on 208 Queen Street. But I found a brand new beer that I've fallen in love with.
Uh-oh.
Brainless on Peaches. Fortunately, it's made in Utah. It's only got 10% alcohol in it. When you first tried it, you know, they had this thing where you get these little 4-ounce samplers of everything. And the Brainless on Peaches sample was a little bit smaller than the other ones. And we're like, well, what's the deal with this? He said, well, it's more expensive beer. It's got more alcohol, so it balances out. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Well, it was probably the most tasty beer. So I ordered a glass. And same thing, you know, the glasses could be filled, but this one's filled maybe a little above a fourth, not quite a half. Same reason. I ordered a second glass. Now, as you know, I don't drink a lot. And the second glass, he filled it up. I think he was impressed I stuck with it, even though he was trying to short me on my booze. But what shocked me most, as I was walking down, I discovered there was a comic store on King Street.
A comic store?
I know. One that I apparently didn't notice the first time I was in D.C. for training. The 7 months I was there doing the call center 4 years ago. Because when I went into this place, the guy behind the counter told me they'd been there 27 years. Which is very, very impressive for a comic book store.
Yes, it is.
The name of the shop is Aftertime Comics. It is what I should have done with Crazy Comics. There's literally no space in that store free. Bookcases everywhere, comic boxes galore, things piled to the ceiling. Corey, you would have loved it because even they had those you know, 70s Marvel mags. They had Epic Illustrateds. They had all sorts of things there. New stuff, old stuff, ranging the gauntlet from dollar comics to new ones. I picked up 4 comics there after browsing for about an hour. That week, Avengers versus X-Men Round 11 came out. So I picked up New Avengers and a couple tie-ins, the Uncanny X-Men number 18 and the New Avengers number 30, which both happen concurrently with Avengers versus X-Men Round 11. So you want to read Round 11 and then read the crossovers for the week. Then browsing through the various back issues, I picked out a couple. The first one, Cliff Merritt and the Very Candid Candidate, a cartoon story of the election of a union officer. Printed in USA, by the way. This is, as you know, I collect some of the freebies. The other one I picked up I thought was kind of apropos. It was a Dell comic, Walt Disney's The Absent-Minded Professor. And what's cool about it is as they're flying in their flivver above Washington, D.C., they're above the Capitol, and you see a nice shot of the mall. And, of course, where the Air and Space Museum was at that time just a bunch of trees. So it was kind of neat just to see it. Matter of fact, the other side was also a bunch of trees, too. They must have – I'd have to look. 1961, I guess, when this was published. So, and that's kind of a neat thing because it reminded me of being in D.C., and it's a nice photo cover. It's something that I've liked and that I've wanted to get back to. So I felt it was a nice shop. If you ever get a chance to swing by, check it out. He did not have a lot of room for new comic books. What he did is he had a box on the counter, and you come in and say, well, I'd like to get this. I'd like to get that. And he just pulls them out and gets them to you. And it sounds like they do a pull and hold service, too. So between After Time Comics and Bilbo Baggins Restaurant, I had a great time.
The new comics on the counter in a box, I'd have a little trouble with that, I'll be honest. Because one of the things I like to do when I go to a shop, I don't know everything that's going to come out. I like to look and see, oh, I didn't know that was coming. Because previews is what, 500 pages?
Yeah.
So I went to a shop as well.
Cool.
Now, last time I went down, there were 2 shops in Galesburg, Illinois. Alternate Realities, and I don't remember the other one. They're both still there, although Alternate Realities, which is on Main Street, there's been a change.
Uh-oh.
Pause for dramatic effect. When I walked in, it looked different. I'm looking around. Basically, I wanted to see how the shop was doing, but I'm also looking for some DC showcases. And the gentleman behind the counter, I asked him a couple questions, and he said, I've owned the shop for about 3 weeks.
Cool.
And I guess he's a former customer who bought the shop. The owner got a job down in St. Louis and was going to close, but found somebody to buy it. And I was wearing the MCBA shirt for next year's Spring Con, 25th anniversary, baby. And we started talking shops, and he didn't know a lot about Diamond and didn't know a lot about the comic business. So I stayed there about an hour and a half talking about, talk to your Diamond rep about this. Make sure that you're getting the big discount list. Check that every Wednesday because that's where you could get the cool stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Told him about the new shop bundles that they have. Both Marvel and DC, I believe, still give out new shop bundles if you have a new shop. I don't know if they're free or if you pay for them, but you get a whole bunch of stuff. You know, trades, recent comics, stuff like that. He has a pull and hold service. His graphic novel section was pretty small, but he says he's going to work on growing that. The back of the store was games, and then the back half of the store, which was probably storage when it was a previous incarnation, you know, before it was a comic shop, he had long tables set up, and every Friday night they have gaming. They have Dungeons and Dragons and Magic and Yu-Gi-Oh! And whatever else people want to come in and play. It was a really nice shop. The owner was really nice. He's actually talking about doing a podcast. I have to actually send him an email once I get, you know, a couple hours at home where I'm awake. But he once set up a podcast. He's from radio. He did radio for years, so he's got advanced equipment.
So he did it professionally, whereas you and I think we just did it, what, college fun?
Yeah, did it in college.
I learned, did just enough to know it's not something I wanted to do.
I learned just enough to know that it pays really poorly and you have to move a lot.
Yeah, go where the jobs are. It's rare to see. We got a local guy, John Hines, who was probably the exception to the rule because he was on radio as I was a kid, and I think he's still on radio somewhere. And for a while, he was like one of the top morning shows. I don't know if you were, this would have been in the 80s. Hines and Berglund, they were the guys to listen to.
Oh.
And they, you know, and then I don't know what happened there. It was WLOL was the, it's part of public radio now, the particular 99.5, the frequency. I think that's what happened is they just, you know, whatever, they just decided they broke up the team, they let it go. He ended up at 104, the country music station. And I know he's around somewhere, but I forget. But, you know, the fact that he's been able to stay in the metro area is actually more of an exception for radio, you know, rather than, because most of the time there's guys, they come in, they disappear, they go somewhere else. You go where the jobs are. And if you're lucky, you're not doing hog reports in the middle of, I don't know, Kansas or something.
In central Illinois near Galesburg.
Mm.
His fandom story was really interesting too. He was an X-Men fan, was in during the big 90s boom, kind of lost interest toward the middle of the 90s like everybody else did, and came back a few years ago. And here's the thing that I found fascinating. He was asking me about the kind of stuff I liked, and I said, well, I'm really loving Walt Simonson's run on the Avengers, and he didn't know who Walt Simonson was. Which at first, you know, Joe, if I go, hey, there's this comic fan, he doesn't know who Walt Simonson is, what would you say?
Must be a new comic fan.
And then I remembered, Walt Simonson hasn't done superhero comics since he left X-Factor.
Mm-hmm.
Over at DC, no one can explain this to me, and no one ever will. They had him writing video game tie-ins.
Probably paid him more money.
No, because he when he came over to Marvel, they put him on the Avengers, and he got a huge pay.
Oh, I see what you mean. I thought he was working for the video companies. He was working for the comic companies.
He worked for DC. He did an Elric comic. Mm-hmm. He would do one shots here and there, and then at the end of his tenure at DC, he was writing comic book adaptations and tie-ins of video games. You've got Walt Simonson! drives me crazy.
Oh, just so you know, I did try the dreaded Oreo cookies I talked about, candy corn Oreo. If you like Oreos, you like candy corn, not bad. To me, I think I woke up an hour later when my blood sugar fell.
I was going to say, did you eat the whole thing and you've developed type 100 diabetes?
It's a brand new style. No, I ended up, what had happened is a cousin of mine came into town and you know, I wanted to give him something fun. And I figured, well, you know, he probably didn't go to Target to buy this. So I bought him some and I bought two packs, one for him, which he liked because his daughter back home loves Oreos and candy corn. So she's just going to give it to her. But the other one we opened and people would try them. And then like, you know, if I try something, I will probably finish it. You know, I'm going to take a little nibble of something and put it back. Most people would like eat like maybe a quarter of it or a third of it and then kind of leave it on their plate, throw it in the garbage. Some people just got grossed out just looking at it. Most people, obviously, when they're busy loading their plate, I would put one right on the corner. So that's how I have fun.
Well, I had fun last week with our new segment, which doesn't have a sponsor. Now, the whole podcast has a sponsor.
Oh, we do?
Yeah, dreamhost.com.
Ah,
best darn web host in the whole known universe.
The whole known universe.
And if you go to DreamHost.com, you put in the code CRAZY, you save $20 on your first year of web hosting. That means you get a free domain name. Joe, CandyCornOreos.com. I bet it's taken. But is it chocolate-dipped candy corn Oreos cause diabetes? I bet that's not taken. You go to DreamHost.com. You put it in. They do a search. They say, no, it's available. And if you buy your web hosting package, it's yours. Free. Then you put in the code CRAZY. You get $20 off, and you've got a website.
So
you're nothing without
Oreos
a website. Oreos
candy corn is available, although you may get a call from the Oreo company.
So go over to DreamHost.com. Now, if you would like to sponsor a segment, just contact us at Corey.Strode@gmail.com, subject line advertising, and we will get back to you with rates and ideas. And we can read your ad. We could do an ad like we do for DreamHost. You can record your ad like Bark Cop does, whatever you want
to
do.
You can even go to the flexible official Crazy Comics and Stuff podcast page. Leave a message there. I know I visit a lot. I don't know about Corey.
I don't have internet at the group home.
Oh.
And I feel like I'm there so much the last few weeks that I ask one of the residents every couple of days, is it okay if I sleep in your bed while you're up at work? And he says, he quit it. So
you missed it.
I think that means no.
You missed it, didn't you?
I missed a whole bunch of everything.
Yeah, you missed it.
My team was nearly full. I've missed so much.
You know, you haven't missed Fall Con yet, because it's coming up Saturday, October 6th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds in the Education Building.
Which is where Fall Con used to
be. Yeah, and the big Spring Con. 70,000 feet of comic book action, over 150 guests, and if you haven't been over to MidwestComicBook.com's website, they did post the ever-changing guest list.
Yeah, they did that this week.
So you can go and see if your favorite guest is going. Mostly a lot of local artists, not a lot of superstars. That's one of the reasons, as we talked about in earlier podcasts, why the Fall Con became a one-day spectacular and the Spring Con became a two-day. Because right now there are so many cons in the fall, trying to find some A-list guests is tough, you know, to have
and
them.
Our convention's better anyway.
It is. Because that's
bargain boxes and discount comics by the score.
Oh yeah. Super huge marketplace, dealers from all over sector 2814.
That's Earth to those of us who are watching the returning Green Lantern animated series.
If you come in costume, they'll let you in free. First 500 people.
I've never heard
get
that.
Get a grab bag, yeah. They're going to have door prizes, special prizes, original comic book art show set up. This is the place that had those glass cases, so they'll be able to, if you got something you want to show up, get a hold of Nick. I know he's out of town as we're doing the podcasting, but he's you just could drop him a line at MidwestComicBook.com. And
I'll be there.
And I'm looking to be there. And the one thing I wanted to mention is that Fall Con, despite the fact that we really talk a lot about it, they're not a paid sponsor. We just like.
No, we're just part of it.
We're part of it. We like them, and we think if you.
I used to be the president of the darn thing till I wised up.
Yeah.
Friends don't let friends run comic book conventions.
I'm just looking at some of the guest lists here. Our favorite, Dan Juergens, will be here.
He's our favorite.
He's my favorite. I like him.
I thought Don McGregor was our favorite.
Well, he's not going to be there. Terry Beatty will be there.
Oh, no. Terry Beatty's one of my favorites.
Yep.
And a damn handsome man.
A fine handsome man.
Not as handsome as Greg Ketter from Dreamhaven Books,
no,
but
no.
Still.
And Greg might even be there. Yeah. Doug Mankey's going to be there. I'm just looking through the list.
Xander Cannon.
Now, Doug Petzowski. I can't pronounce his name. Arsenic Lullaby, and he also does stuff in Mad Magazine. He's got a full-color comic issue coming out.
And his, if you've never read his stuff, it is hilarious.
Dark,
it's
funny.
It's really dark, but it's really funny.
Yes. I would definitely recommend. So check it out. Again, MidwestComicBook.com. You go to the main page, and they'll have all the guest lists. I don't know if they got the dealer list up. Our old buddy Pat's going to be there. Yep, they got the guest list up too. Comic College. Graham Cracker will be there. Red Grumba. Oak Leaf. Twin Cities. Yep. Looks like a full list. Because again, I don't know if they added dealers or if they just brought more variety in, but it's going to be a blast. I'm looking forward to it. I am trying to save my money, but as you might have noticed, I posted on our official Crazy Comics. I got another piece of my Supergirl collection. One that I didn't think I would probably ever get. And I had to settle for a few compromises. I finally picked up a Mego Supergirl.
Ooh.
Now, the interesting thing
about... Now, does Mego Supergirl make out with Mego Mr. Spock?
Well, I might. I also got a Mego Fonzie somewhere, which I have to figure out where it went.
Yeah, I miss Fonzie.
Fonzie
picked some great comics.
The Supergirl I picked up was an original and complete. The big thing was that she's got the belt, she's got the little S, and this is the 70s Supergirl, so she's got the go-go boots. But this guy who had it put on a different cape, which is a reproduction cape, although he included the original one, which was kind of smaller and a little more beat up. And he put on some Wonder Woman boots. The original doll had just little tiny red shoes, and the boots actually do a little bit better. So I picked that up. I picked up a reproduction box of the original Mego. And so now I got myself at least what I consider a good replica, because if I found an original mint one, it would be probably $2,000, maybe $3,000.
Whoa.
I can settle for this one.
I'm not even going to ask how much it was.
$80. Well, and the reproduction box was like 13. Ask. So while you were busy skidding your way down to Illinois, that's what I was doing.
Okay.
Gotta have my priorities.
Obscure comic book characters. At the end of this month's Avenging Spider-Man, they said that the Hypno Hustler would be in the next issue, but that's not the obscure character. It just reminded me of my favorite obscure character in Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man around that time.
Mm-hmm.
Razorback!
Oh, jeez. The Razorback, superhero.
Your 70s character. He's a 18-wheeler who talks in CB language and wears a giant pig head. That's his costume. He's got the huge... It's almost like there's a hat with a pig head on top of it. And I don't think he had any powers at all other than saying 10-4, good buddy. But he was in Spider-Man for about 6 issues.
That was Peter Parker, I believe.
Yeah, that was Peter Parker. And when I got the essential Peter Parker, I'm reading it going, oh my God, they really wanted this character to take off. Because he's saving Spider-Man constantly, and it's, oh.
Didn't he have a remote control truck that would come when he called? That's how they broke out of it. They had like a Batman type thing where they were tied up and about to die, and then, wait a minute, a truck came blasting through like a bad
18-wheeler
bear episode.
Oh, 70s Marvel. But the Hypno Hustler is going to be in Avenging Spider-Man next month. Who's just as bad. He can hypnotize you by playing disco music. And I think the biggest thing about his costume was the fro.
And I didn't fight the Dazzler. That was the sad part.
No, he didn't. Joe, do you have an obscure comic book character that you've been giggling about this week?
I haven't been giggling about it, but I do dig it up every so often, reread it. I'm talking about Amazing Man.
Oh, I love that book.
The comic book series by, help me with the pronunciation, Bob
Rozeski.
Yep. Stevens. Let's see. It was 12 issues starting in 86. They did a couple specials the following years. actually had an origin story. And
a cover by Frank Miller at the height of Dark Knight.
The last time we saw Poor Amazing Man was an ambush year, ambush bug year none on Death Row. Before he got to Death Row, it was basically, I'm just reading this off of Wikipedia, The Misadventures of Siegfried Horatio Hunch III, a benign, deranged little man in Queens, New York, dresses in a homemade costume and performs, oh, superhero deeds like watching out for local children, unclogging drains. In the first issue, the character, you know, everybody's kind of taking it. He's just part of the neighborhood. You know, if you weren't part of the neighborhood, you'd look at him like, what the heck? But everybody else is like, he's just there. But he does save a child from being hit by a truck in the first issue, which earns him a little bit more respect and food from him. There were other things that I liked in this. I love the art. They had a couple characters in there. There was one character, husband, wife, that just, you know, were constantly in love with each other. The one question they always wondered about is that Hunch kept getting, every day would get tons of magazines. No one could figure out, what did he do for money? How did he exist? So one day, this couple and his best friend, Denton Fix, who was a writer for BC Comics, who also happened to look like a beagle. Not a Snoopy beagle, but...
I was going to say, he's a beagle. A
dog-faced boy, which I don't remember. Anyways, they follow him around town just to figure out where he's getting them. They see him pick up a can. He goes, that's what he must be doing. He must be recycling cans. Dozens of cans. Billions of cans. He's on a recycling can industry. Nope, he just dumped it in the recycle bin. And so everything they did, they followed around. They could not figure out how he did. And at the end, they were all getting their mail. And I think it was Fix grabbed his mail. He goes, oh, I got one of them things from Publisher Clearinghouse. And he just threw it. And they looked at him and said, aren't you going to join? Aren't you going to send in? He said, nah, nobody real ever wins. And as the art pans down, you see the names, you know, it could be Simon, Garfunkel, and then, of course, Siegfried Horatio Hunch III.
Oh, cool.
He won the Publisher's Million. That's how he felt so obligated by winning that he subscribed to all the company's magazines, hence all the magazines he gets. The interesting thing about Amazing Man, other than just that it was fun and it might have taken place in the DC universe, might not, and if it did, it didn't really matter. But it was one of a handful of DC titles not featuring the Comic Code Authority. It actually had zombies in it. Ooh, danger, danger. Even though there was a forbidden by the Comic Code. And there was basically zero publicity about it.
Yeah.
The last issue, number 12 of the main series, has a gorgeous Frank Miller cover of The Dark Knight, and on the top is Amazing Man riding down with him. So they're fun issues to pick up. You probably find them, I don't know, probably in a quarter bin. I doubt we'll ever see them collected. Like I said, they pretty much is a thrown away character. Last time we saw him was on Death Row with a bunch of other forgotten characters. He did curiously appear in Batman and Brave and Bold episode.
Yep.
So that was kind of cool.
And the artist, Stephen DiStefano, the only other comic work of his I've ever seen is he was part of the group that put together a mini series for Dark Horse in the 90s called Instant Piano.
Oh, I've got that.
And Stefano now, I think he works in animation, but he has a wonderful, wonderful blog about old comics. And I'm friends with him on Facebook. And every so often, I'll get into a conversation with him about old comics. And guy knows his stuff. It's too bad that he left comics because I thought Amazing Man was just, it was a lot of fun. It was an interesting read. It was a book you could give to people who never had read a comic book before in their life and they'd enjoy it.
Oh.
But just not enough people buying it.
Yeah, you can tell them I'm a big fan. I'll have to look and if he's got room. I know sometimes on Facebook, these guys, they just don't have room for everybody who wants to be a fan.
Uh-oh, Joe, do you hear that?
No.
We haven't heard that music in a long time.
Uh-oh.
Sad news, everyone.
Aw.
We haven't done this in a while, but two comics that I enjoy have been canceled.
Hmm.
One is already over, and that's iZombie. Ended with issue 28. And I liked it up until about the last four or five issues, because you could really tell that they were told, okay, wrap it up. There was, let's see, there are four trade paperbacks of it. It's a story of a newly dead woman who has to eat a brain every month to retain her memories. Or if she doesn't, she turns into one of the zombies you see on Walking Dead. Her best friend was a ghost. She had another friend who was a were-terrier. Not a werewolf, a were-terrier.
Mm-hmm.
There were mummies. There were vampires. We eventually got a Frankenstein-like monster, and it was really fun. It had beautiful art by, Mike Allred, but just not enough people bought it, so it went away with issue 28. The other book that, is ending in about 2 months, The Defenders.
Oh, good. Then I guess I don't have to worry about dropping it.
I liked Matt Fraction's story on it. It really read like an old Gerber story from the 70s where weird stuff's going on, but it's grounded by the fact that the main characters were reacting to how weird it was. It was Doctor Strange, Iron Fist, Submariner, Silver Surfer, and the Red She-Hulk. And 12 issues and done. Matt Fraction's going to be doing other stuff. I could tell that the book was in sales trouble when they moved to Terry Dodson off of it, because the higher paid artists, they don't like him on lower selling books, because the lower selling books don't make as much money.
Bring back Next Wave.
So that's two comics that I enjoyed being canceled.
You know what's weird is I have not.
So maybe that's what I'm freaking about.
I have not looked at a previews in months. And with all these title changes and things changing, I really think eventually I'm gonna like be missing something. Because I was just reading a blurb where Amazing Spider-Man's finishing at issue 700 again. And not the 700, the finishing part. And I'm like, well, okay, that's fine. What's gonna replace it? You know, and I don't know if the if that's the thing in comics, they go, well, we got to end it and start over again because we need the bump or what it is. I mean, I did see an ad for something that I thought it read the Uncanny X-Men. No, the Uncanny Avengers.
Yes.
Okay, so I didn't hallucinate that.
Spinning out of Avengers versus X-Men.
So I may have to pick up a previews or maybe just peruse one occasionally, because I know, like, even now I went to the shop and all these DC Zero issues, and you know, there was ones that I totally missed that I was interested in. I missed the Batman Zero, which I guess is the big sellout all over.
Oh, no.
Because and then I picked up Phantom Stranger Zero because I've liked the character, although I didn't necessarily like what they read about.
Yeah, I read.
But you know what I'm freaking about?
I'm just really unhappy about it.
Which one? The
Phantom Stranger. Oh. The thing I liked about Phantom Stranger was, even when they did his origin in Secret Origins, they gave four origins and they never said which one it was.
Yeah.
He was mysterious, but not in a Wolverine way where it's, oh, we're just going to keep piling clues on, even if they contradict each other. It was more, how would you know what his origin is? He started as a horror host, I think, right? And then became a character in the DC universe. And they kind of hinted at things, but they never really gave you clues. And now it's, no, you know who he is. You know everything about him. He's not interest. One of the things that made him interesting was he was mysterious, and now he's not mysterious anymore. So
I'll tell you what I'm freaking on, though.
Okay.
Doctor Who.
But yeah.
On a good way.
We're going to have some spoilers here because I have a couple.
You're going to have to not spoil them, because what I've discovered, and I don't know if this is BBC America or just a flaw. I have my dish receiver set up to record the first run Doctor Who. It is recording every single Doctor Who. So I missed the Dalek one because I came back and I was going to watch it before I went to DC. And no, they just recorded all the reruns. So it got wiped out. So, okay, my bad. I got a high definition one to replace one that broke. No big deal. I set it up right. I went to go watch them yesterday and I got the same freaking thing. Just the reruns. It wiped out the last. So the first three Doctor Who's I don't have. I did for like $1.99 off of Amazon download and stream the first issue, the first one. I don't know if I'm going to keep doing that because of the second thing I'm freaking out about. When I got back on my nice Toshiba laptop with the high definition screen, it's cracked.
Oh.
And it's cracked in such a way that the pixels are bleeding out right in the middle, just enough to make anything you're trying to look at annoying.
Yeah.
At home, it's not a big deal. I've got a regular monitor from an older Dell computer, actually the one from Crazy Comics. I just plug it into the back, so I have a monitor I can use. But, you know, and the thing is it costs, it's cheaper to buy a new one than it is to buy an old one. And even looking at monitor prices, if I had just bought a regular laptop instead of a high definition, I could probably find one for anywhere from $200 to $400 and pop it in. But no, I had to go high definition. I mean, it's not that bad. I can literally take my laptop and use that special cable, plug it into my TV and have a Blu-ray. And like I said, the laptop is fine. I mean, the power is fine. Everything else is working 100%. It's just the friggin' screen is busted. So eventually.
Well, then I will hold off on my Doctor Who freaking.
Yeah, because, you know, I don't know, unless I get sent somewhere and I get bored. I mean, $1.99 is not a lot, but I will eventually buy the series. I just don't know if I want to watch it on, you know, just take your.
On a cracked screen.
Take your laptop, people, or your monitor, and draw from the bottom left corner an S all the way through the middle of the screen, ending at the upper right corner. That's essentially, and I've got, there's other cracks in it, they just haven't bled yet. You know, so, I swear, the whole friggin' world's against me, people.
Well, not everything, because there's got to be stuff you're geeking on.
Well, there is. And as you may have noticed, I went to Batman Live.
Ooh.
My lovely wife scored us some tickets. Interesting thing, we went on the fourth day. This particular show, it seems to be in arenas. Comparing it inevitably to the Spider-Man I saw over the earlier in the year, I question whether they needed a huge arena for it, unless they, some of the earliest shows might have sold out more, because this one was not sold out by any means of this imagination. What was funny was in our particular section, there was one row that was full. There was nobody below us, nobody above us. And we all looked at each other and like, why are we sitting here? And if I had thought about it, I would have probably snuck down closer to it. But
why are we walking like that?
Yeah. It was a fun show. I mean, it definitely, they covered the origin. It basically dealt more with the origin of Robin and how he became. And they, all your favorites are in there. The actor who played Joker, and Mark Frost, was fabulous. He pretty much stole the show. I believe Jim Lee, I don't know if he had something to do with this or if he just, I bought the big programming book, the big thick Batman Live, and my my daughter was looking at the, it's got a die cut cover.
Die cut.
And it's got gold,
special cover.
Gold foil on the cover.
Foil.
It's got a glossy black on the back. So if you go to Batman Live and your goal is to get one of these in mint shape, good luck. Because this thing didn't survive in mint shape getting home. Is my daughter looking at it, it's got the bat symbol on it, and I said, no, it's not the bat symbol, it's just a picture of somebody's really bad teeth. And she's like, you just ruined it for me. But the whole production was good. I posted a quick snapshot on Facebook, and I think I put it on our crazy page, of the beginning Gotham City set, which was really, really cool. And the other thing that was kind of fun was the way they transition between scenes, because it was almost like a comic book coming to 3D life. Because as they, like when they finally got the Batmobile and they hopped in and they were zooming off to rush to Arkham Asylum to finish whatever dastardly plot, all the villains were there. They did a very extended sequence of an actual animation, almost like the TV show, of them blitzing through Gotham. And some of the other scenes, you would see like the pages would flip on the monitor in the back and it would get to the next scene. But it was a lot of fun. I'm kind of blitzing through the program book to see if there's anything else worth talking about. Again, the program book we bought, I bought a couple of the buttons. And the other thing that was really cool, they had a limited edition Hot Wheel of the Batmobile from the Batman Live. And of course, in the olden days, I'd probably be like, okay, I better buy 10 of these because I'll bring them back to the shop and sell them. Because I've never seen them anywhere else other than at this show. So a good time was had by all. I went with my daughters. My wife declined.
Declined.
So I thank her. So that was kind of my geeking for the week.
For me, it's a couple of things I read.
Oh, about Rush Limbaugh saying feminists have made men's penises 10% smaller?
No.
Oh, you're right. That's excessive weight gain. I'm sorry.
I read the first 5 issues of a comic called Bad Medicine. It's from Oni. And again.
Bad Medicine. Hey.
Again, it uses a lot of horror icons. The second story is about the first story gathers the group together. The second story is about werewolves, and it's kind of a new twist on the werewolf idea. And in a way, it feels like a TV show because it's a group of characters. They set up the situation, and each story is going to be them dealing, how does this group interact and deal with this situation? But I like the characters a lot. They've got enough backstory that I can see a lot of growth potential. And I don't know. Lately, I've been in a mood for the classic horror characters, the vampires, the werewolves, the mummies, and things like that. And it seems like they're kind of showing up in comics more lately. The other book that I read is a book called Underwater Welder. And it's by Jeff Lemire, who does Animal Man and Sweet Tooth, and he did the Essex County graphic novels. This is a graphic novel from Top Shelf, and it's about a character who, his job is an underwater welder. His wife is about to give birth, but he's haunted by his past, and I don't want to give any more away. The back of the book says it's the best Twilight Zone episode never filmed. I agree with that. It's got very creepy elements to it, but it's also based in character and not weird stuff. Weird stuff happens, but it's more how the character relates to it. And it's Top Shelf. Top Shelf is one of the publishers where pretty much anything they put out, I enjoy. And it's the only publisher Alan Moore feels is honorable enough to publish his work. So I read those two. I did finish reading iZombie. I enjoyed iZombie. four trades. Wish there would have been more.
The only thing I...
And I did read, and we should talk about... Uh-oh. Avengers versus X-Men number 11.
Yeah. I did stop, like I said, at the comic shop, picked up a bunch of books. Haven't read any, though, yet. But I did read Avenger X-Men. As a matter of fact, I have it in front of me, so we can talk about it. I even scored a variant cover.
Ooh! Well, what? There are six different variant covers?
Yeah, I have no idea which one it was. I just picked this one up because I wanted to read it. Now, when is the next one out? In a month or in 2 weeks?
3 weeks.
3 weeks. Okay. So 2 weeks.
And then after that, all the Marvel Now stuff starts coming out.
And I have no idea what that is. Give me a heads up.
Marvel Now is basically, you know, Bendis is leaving the Avengers and going over to the X-Men.
So I just want to pay attention to the X-Men and see if he can rebuild them.
Well, and they're shuffling people around. Hickman's going to be leaving the Fantastic Four, and Matt Fraction's coming onto it. Fraction's leaving Iron Man. Basically, they're... I remember when they first started talking about Marvel Now, people said, oh, this is like the new DC Universe. No, it's really with Bendis leaving the Avengers and other creators ending their stories around the same time, they just decided, you know what? Let's just move creators around. You're going to get a whole bunch of new number ones as new creators come onto books. So I am liking this crossover. I think it's very well done. I didn't much care for Siege, which was the last big crossover. And it's done in a way that it feels big. It feels like there's a lot going on. The books that tie into it are telling the other parts of the story that you're interested in, rather than the what they always called the Red Sky crossover, where characters are doing stuff. Oh, look, there's something that's related to this crossover. And then they go back to their own story.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, it is about what's going on with the X-Men, what's going on with the Avengers. But there was a big death, because every crossover must have a big death.
And this, we should probably toss those spoiler warnings.
That's right. Spoilers, because... everybody.
Corey told me about it. I was like, really? That's not the way I read it.
But that's the big death. They release the comic and then they have the story in the newspaper. And Professor Xavier dies.
Again.
And here's the thing. You know the joke where Jean Grey, her only superpower is she dies?
She keeps coming back.
Professor X has died far more times than Jean Grey. Professor X died in the 60s.
Back when people actually thought it was cool.
Well, back when they wanted the character, they wanted Professor X gone. But then the sales didn't do well, so they brought him back by saying, no. He didn't die. He was replaced by this character because he was down hiding in the basement to fight aliens. And that's who died, not the real Professor X. And if you think I'm joking, I'm not. But didn't he just come back to, what, he died and then he came back to life, I think in 2007 was the last time. And really, since he came back, he's been shoved all the way to the side.
Yeah.
He was part of the big mutant genesis story at the beginning of it. When Brubaker took over the X-Men and they revealed the third Summers brother. But since then, he's just kind of been on the side, hasn't taken part in any stories. Yes, it's Professor X, but really, to me, it's like they wrote him out years ago. They brought him back from the dead and just kind of never did anything with him.
Yeah, and I'm so far from reading X-Men, it wasn't... It was like, oh, he's standing and he's alive. Okay, that's good. What I always found interesting is just the interplay he has, because as part of the story, Magneto brought Xavier there.
Yes.
And this is almost the whole thing with Avenger X-Men is it all could have been solved by just everybody calming down and talking. Because even way back when we talked about the first issue, I mean, essentially it was Scott that fired the first shot, you know. Or actually, I've had other people tell me they thought, well, Captain showing up on Utopia unannounced was the first shot. You know, so it was real interesting. But it's come down to that, you know, it looks like they either are going to take Scott out or they're going to have to take him down. I don't know if he's going to be the other one killed or if no one else will die. We'll just get rid of Xavier until he decides to come back again.
Yeah. I will be interested to see what they do, because they have had him on the covers of upcoming books, but that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, that's very true.
Because they did have the, I think my favorite fake out they did was they leaked a cover to Astonishing X-Men. It was either a cover or a last page that showed Jean Grey back from the dead. And when it was published, no, it was Colossus. So maybe it's a fake out. I can't see how they can redeem Scott Summers from this unless they say, yeah, the minute the Phoenix Force showed up, it made him crazy. Because he really has been the villain of this story.
You know,
and in Corey, a way, they've been building to it.
I'll be right back. You keep talking. I'll be right back in a minute.
Okay. Well, Joe seems to have wandered away. So while he's off, I'll talk about something I've been reading. I've been reading Master of Kung Fu while I'm on my overnights at work. And one thing I'll say about Master of Kung Fu, and it's like this for a lot of 70s DC and Marvel books, when I pick up a comic now, they're much more visual, and they're written very differently. There's been a huge quantum shift in how comics are being written now. A lot of people complain, oh, they're written more like movies. And in a way, that's good. But in one way, when I read 70s Marvel, it's like reading old pulp magazines or, you know, the men's adventure stories or things like that. When I read an issue of Master of Kung Fu, each issue takes about a half hour because it's very dense. There are 6 to 12 panels a page, and there are lots of captions, lots of dialogue. And one issue of Master of Kung Fu will tell about the same amount of story as 3 issues of a modern comic. I'm not saying which is better, because it's just a different storytelling style. But one thing I like about Master of Kung Fu, aside from the fact that it's a very well-done comic, is that it's very dense. I have just recently read issues 46 to 51. No, I'm sorry, 45 to 51. And issues 45 to 50 are the best James Bond story I've ever read. And I know that sounds weird when it's a Master of Kung Fu, but what it is, Doug Mensch is telling the story. It's a big budget spy movie, and Dr. Fu Manchu, who's the main villain, we finally found out what his big plan was that he's been working on since the series began. And Nalen Smith, who's the head of MI6, and a character in the Fu Manchu novels, sends his agents, you know, we've got some intelligence, they're going to go to Fu Manchu's main headquarters, whatever. And each issue is told from the viewpoint of a different member of the team. So the first issue is told from Liko Wu's perspective, and the next issue is told from Shang-Chi's perspective, and the next issue is told from Blackjack Tar's perspective, and on and on and on, up until issue 50, which is the big climax of the story, and it's told from Fu Manchu's perspective. And it does what you need to do when you have a kind of a classic villain. He thinks he's right. And he's willing to cut corners and compromise to do what he feels is right. The story takes a lot of twists and turns. There's a lot that goes on. And the other thing that's just really... that makes this stand up above a lot of other 70s comics and is worth digging in the back issues for, Paul Galassi's art. One of the things about Paul Galassi's art through the 80s, 90s, and now is it seems very stiff. It's heavily photo-referenced, so the characters don't look like they're in motion. They look very posed. This was earlier in his career. Master Kung Fu is the thing that made Paul Galassi kind of a hot artist. He uses photo reference, but he also does it in such a way that it really feels like a comic. I think the inking has a lot to do with that, where everything doesn't seem so posed. And Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu, he draws him as if it's Bruce Lee. So this is Bruce Lee in a James Bond movie. It's very dense, there's a lot of twists, there's a lot of gadgets, there's tons of action, there's drama, every character has to make a choice of some kind. It's just excellent, and issue 51, if that was the last issue of Master Kung Fu, it would have worked. Because it does feel like we have been building from... Master Kung Fu started in Special Marvel whatever, number 17... Issue 19. It changed to Master of Kung Fu. So it hasn't really 50 issues. It's been more 30-some. But it feels like this 3-year story. Bits and pieces from everywhere. Little hints that have been dropped in other issues. All come together in this. And it feels like this is the end of the story. Now, one of the things is, when I was a kid, I didn't start reading Master of Kung Fu till around issue 80. So, and the series went to issue 125, but I read everything from like 80-something to 125. And it does hit some very huge peaks afterward, which I'll probably talk about. But this really feels like the big story. And when it's over... if that was the last issue, you'd go, okay, that was a great, successful comic series. But it does continue on, and it does have some really great issues afterward, including, and I'll talk about it when we get to the future, some Mike Zeck artwork that is off the chart unbelievable, and then Gene Day. When Gene Day comes in as artist, the book hits a peak that... it may well be my favorite comic series from the 70s, because Gene Day's art and Doug Mensch's storytelling mesh so perfectly, and is so... the art doesn't just tell the story, but it heightens the story, and it adds symbolism, and it adds so much more to it. Whereas most artist-writer teams, the artist tells the story very well. And this is a good comic. The art tells the story very well. With Gene Day, he added so much to the story that he took what was a great story and brought it into the classic realm. So, been reading Master of Kung Fu. I'm also going into a whole bunch of overnight shifts. I've got 12 overnight shifts in a row, some of which are 12 to 14 hour shifts, because we're down some people at the group home, and when they call and say, hey, Corey, would you like the shifts? Usually I'm half asleep, so I go, huh, what, oh, you overtime? Okay, yeah. And now I'm just kind of killing time till Joe gets back. He said he'd be right back. So, well, let's see. We've already done Geekin' and Freakin'. We've already done Tales from the Shop. We've already done Obscure Characters. Well, I guess I'll just end the episode then, and if Joe comes back, maybe we'll add more onto it, but guess I'm just going to end the episode. So, as we say every episode, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most. And without Joe here to say, hit my music. How am I gonna? Maybe I could do an imitation of him. Somebody call my mama. Hit my music. God, that sounded terrible.
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll. Hey.